Hello!
Hi.
Hi.
And welcome to Praise Dionysus.
Praise him!
So this is love burning.
That was gross.
And welcome back to Jake and James's Chuckle Fest.
Here we are.
Here we are, chuckling up a storm.
That's it.
And today on the Chuckle Fest...
Ha ha.
Okay. Today on the Chuckle Fest, we're going to be talking about Con 2077 by Con Kudus, Breaking Bread with Bambi by The Maybe Pile, NTNNNN, presented by Century, and Mina vs. the Martians by Innes Lloyd.
Wonderful.
That was a tricky one.
Yeah. Dodged a lot of potential pitfalls.
A lot of weird ones in there.
Only half of those things were real words.
Who's making all these weird shows? I'm excited to talk about them.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that good? Hi.
Hi!
Hello!
Hello!
Hi, Jake, how are you?
Super duper good, James, thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's this tone you've taken with me?
No, just trying it out, seeing if I like it.
I don't.
No?
No, too mean.
Too mean?
Yeah.
You haven't seen mean yet, mate.
Oh, yeah. That was menacing and kind of attractive.
Oh!
What does that say about me?
Well, no more of that for me, then.
How's your chuckle fest going?
It's fine, it's chuckly enough. Been doing a lot of darting between venues and such.
Yes, you've been running around. Your calves must be looking great.
My calves look incredible. Said the cockiest farmer in town.
Oh, yeah, good. Chris, you know, cows.
Sexy cows.
Sexy cows. All right, well, what's happened to me recently? I went to Flynn's. Flynn is my partner.
Oh, yeah, congratulations.
Thank you so much. We've been together for 3 years.
Oh, well done.
God, this is like 50 First Dates. Is that movie, 50 First Dates?
Where Drew Barrymore has brain damage and Adam Sandler takes advantage of her because she has nice hair.
Yeah, except you keep forgetting that I have a partner.
That's a ridiculous accusation. My brain works real good. Anything else going on with you?
Don't know about that. Anywho, went over to Flynn's place last night and I got there quite late and I was going to go to, like, he was already asleep. He falls asleep in, like, the space of a minute. It's really annoying. Anywho, I was going to crawl into bed and just go to sleep, but I need to have a shower first because I'm a person that has a shower before I go to sleep.
Right.
Which is a normal thing to do. A lot of people don't think it is, but you're getting into bed filthy and that's on you. So, I have to wait for the bathroom to be free. There's someone in the bathroom. And so I open the door to the living room, I see someone's in the bathroom, go back to Flynn's room, and I just sort of sit in the dark and wait.
Quack, quack,
until I can hear someone come out of the bathroom. 20 minutes go by, no one's come out of the bathroom. I'm like, oh, okay. I wait a little bit longer, and then I go and check, and it turns out no one was in the bathroom. It was the washing machine and dryer going, and someone had left the light on and closed the door. So I spent like a half hour sitting in the dark.
Quack, quack.
Thank you. At like midnight, waiting for someone to come out of the bathroom when I could have just gone straight in and had a shower and gotten straight into bed. So I'm grumpy from that. I'm grumpy from that because the only person to blame is me.
That story had everything. Characters, twists.
No, it didn't.
Turns.
Oh, it did have a twist.
Yeah?
Yeah. The twist was that, Jake, no one... Did you listen? The twist was that no one was in the bathroom.
Yes.
Yeah. So I had a shower. Look, I haven't been up to much recently. Have you been up to much recently? Do you have something fun to report to top my story?
No one's criticising your story.
Sounds like you just
did. Any story told is an act of generosity, and I would never snub a person for doing that. I mean, look at what I'm about to tell you. I finished a book that I didn't like very much, and I saw the Mean Girls musical movie, and I didn't like that very much either. I liked it more than the general consensus seems to be on the internet.
Okay, interesting. I thought people quite liked the movie.
No.
Ah.
No. Okay. I'd say, I don't know, algorithms have pushed me into a shadowy corner of pessimism where people...
I think algorithms are pushing you in a certain way.
Just me?
Well, you and a few other select people.
Yes. But yeah, no, I liked things about it. I thought Renee Rapp was fantastic.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she was the standout thing of the whole thing.
She's beautiful and incredible and stunning, and I love her.
What? Why? Why are you on this bandwagon?
Her voice is insane.
Okay.
She's got an amazing voice.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I have to say on that.
Oh, great. I thought it was odd that, like, the romantic leads looked like each other wearing different wigs. I think that's always a strange and weirdly common thing to have happen. It really just feels like the casting director only knows about one type of attractiveness. Like, Ryan Murphy wants every male heartthrob in his shows to look exactly the same.
Yeah.
They're just, like, tight-faced brunette men. But anyway, not to keep talking about this, we don't need to, but yeah, one of the shortcomings of it was just the fact that, like, the movie itself was poorly adapted into being the stage musical that it was. Like, that was just, like, a lazy adaptation in the first place with a weak book and weak songs, and then you turn that into a movie and you don't make many changes, and it's going to carry over a bunch of the same issues at the same time as being a movie that doesn't structurally or tonically seem like it even knows how to be a movie yet.
Right.
It seemed like it was a few drafts away from it making any sense. Like, the way that it seemed, like, at times kind of, like, wanting to be cleverly meta, and then sometimes just wasn't that at all, in a very unwelcome, almost self-conscious way of, like, musicals are a bit lame. It's like, why not try to, like, make a thing that will please the people that don't think that about musicals?
Yeah, don't make a musical if you think that.
It was yeah, just one of the critiques, I guess, that I have. But I don't know. And they also ruined, like, the one song that I've ever listened to on purpose.
Revenge Party?
Yes, I love Revenge Party, and it was ruined.
How was it ruined?
You'll see, they cut it up, they leave a bunch of it out, they film it atrociously. Aww. Like, in the way that it exists in the world of the movie, it's just, it totally goes to waste.
That's such a shame.
It's such a shame.
Oh.
Anyway.
God.
Yeah, so what would you rate your dryer experience?
30 stars, because that's how many minutes I had to fucking wait to realize there was no one in the bathroom, and I'm still upset about it.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But I'm gonna push through, and I'm gonna be a big, strong person about it. What about you, Jake? How would you rate your, I guess, Mean Girls experience?
I'm going to give it 38 stars, because that's how many minutes I feel they could have cut out of the movie.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, should we talk about some comedy?
Okay. Hello, James.
Hi, Jake. Hello.
Hi. I went to the Malthouse Theatre the other day.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was the first time that I've been to the Malthouse for the festival.
Yeah, I was, you know what, not an important story.
We prefer it off the beaten track. That's just how we party. Hi, I'm Jake.
Yuck, hate this. Go on, Malthouse Theatre.
Yes, well remembered.
Thank you.
So, I was there, and I was there to see Con 2077 by Con Kudis.
Yes.
Yes,
who sent you a lovely message once that made you feel really happy.
Oh, shut up forever. Yes. Why do I tell you anything? It's so embarrassing.
I don't know, because we do a podcast.
Con's great. We've spoken about two of his shows in the past, and now here we are, returning to the King.
For a third one.
What's the third one? No, I'm not calling him the King.
Oh, Return of the King is Lord of the Rings.
That's what I was going for.
Why were you going for a Lord of the Rings?
Because you know when a stepdad tries to connect with his stepson and he tries to talk in his language.
The only time I know about stepdads trying to connect with their stepson are when they have sex.
I was about to say, yes, pornography.
It's pornography, yeah.
Yeah, when it comes to step-parents, my references are either Julia Roberts in Step-Mum or, you know,
hardcore fuck.
I don't know how to tie a tie.
You want to lift to school? It'll cost you. You know, these are the sort of things we know about stepdads.
You're not my real dad.
I know. Okay, on an unrelated note, Con in his show.
Unrelated, like how stepsons aren't related to their stepdads.
Oh, yeah, that was absolutely intentional.
What a nifty little segue.
Yeah,
ding dong. Yeah.
Was Con up to much in his show?
He was, fortunately, yes. Great. There was a bunch of stuff going on.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, sure. So it's called Con 2077. It's pretty high concept, which I'm not saying facetiously. It's just my gay voice that makes it sound like I'm being sarcastic, but it is high concept.
It's a curse of yours.
It's such a curse. The other day, just to immediately get
into that,
the other day I was at my stupid job that I like now. Got a new job. I don't want to talk about it, but I like it. In this bar that I work at, we have a coffee machine, but the coffee machine doesn't work. Like, it's just like a leftover from when the restaurant used to do, like when this bar used to do coffees.
Yep,
okay. So it's just sitting there. So now, like, at least once a shift, someone walks in wanting coffee, and I have to tell them the coffee machine is just ornamental, it doesn't make coffee. Mm. But because of my stupid gay voice, it always sounds like I'm saying it sarcastically. So it's like, the other day, this couple was there, and they're like, can we get two espressos? And I was like, no, the coffee machine's ornamental, it doesn't even work. And they were like, ah, ha, 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 two espressos, please. And I was like, no, I'm telling you. That it doesn't
listen to my words.
And they're like, ha ha ha, give us our espressos.
It's a curse that you need one of those in Joker, the movie Joker, about Joker.
Uh-huh.
He has like a little card that he presents to people when he's laughing too much that says like, I have a laughing disability of some sort. You need one that says, I have permanent sarcasm voice.
God, I need like a lanyard or something. Or it's like a nifty little badge. Or less homophobia in the world.
No, I think the first two are probably better options.
God, I'm a victim of so many things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Con.
Con, yes. So it's high concept, he said sincerely.
High concept?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Yes. So, Con 2077. So, in the first sort of 7 minutes of this show, it comes to us in the form of storytelling via theatre, that what's happened is that we're in the year 2077, there was some sort of meteor shower thing. Is it a meteor shower if it eventuates in a lot of death? Is meteor showers just when it's pretty?
Ooh. Yeah, I wonder. I think asteroid collision.
Oh. Well, meteors hit the world and kill all of the comedians. We're in the future.
Thank God.
Oh my God.
Thank God for that, right? Leave some pussy for the rest of us.
So we're in 2077, and what's happened is that they've discovered the frozen corpse of Concudus. And so what they do is they defrost him, and then they want to have, like, they're going to put him in a simulation where they get him to do like a comedy set so that they can make sure that he's the right level of funny to bring jokes back to society.
That's a really funny concept.
I'm leaving out little sci-fi details because I'm bad at retaining them.
Could you try and remember one or two of them?
Oh no, that's the bones of it. I'm quite sure. Only like little flecks of other facts that I'm missing out just because I don't have cupboards to put these things
fact
in.
Fact flex.
As usual, which I don't say begrudgingly, he's very, very impressive. In this particular regard and others, but in the way that he incorporates like sound cues and sound elements and like technological components to his works. Like there was a part where the things that he would say into the microphone would come out reversed, which is not a feature that I believed microphones to be able to do.
And do you think it was like authentically what he was saying at that point in time?
Unless he's some sort of naked magician with his capacity to make things happen that we didn't know were pre-planned, but seem as if they're happening.
Either way, that's impressive.
Either way, it's strange that naked magicians are my go-to example for magicians doing stage things.
And it's weird that I didn't question that.
That is strange too.
I think I'm just so used to you talking about the naked magicians now.
I recommended it to my sister the other day and she just stared at me blankly. And I was like, yeah, they're really good at what they do.
And they're naked. So gone.
Yeah. No, I believe that he was doing it in real time.
Wow.
Yeah, God, no. He's amazing what he does with sound alone, let alone comedy.
Oh my God, slick sound cues and sound design can really make a comedy show, like, just shine. Like, I am a strong believer of, like, a slick sound cue can make me laugh every time.
Sure. Well, if that's what you're into, then put yourself in the hands of Concudus.
I'm not going to put myself in anyone's hands. I'm too heavy. I'm a grown man, Jake. I'm a fully grown man.
Some of us are sigh men, some of us are chuckle men, and some of us are grown men.
Oh.
Something that occurred to me that I'd never noticed before, but something that I adore about Con's performance style and the way that his shows work, is just, across the board, it's always been the case that he really enjoys the playfulness of his work. And with this show, more than others, I'd even say, he really enjoys finding things with the audience in the space during the show. And I just think it's so sweet and so indicative, too, of the type of artist that he is.
That's so generous.
Like, if someone in the crowd does something surprising or funny or sweet in the way that they engage with him through the crowd work that he does, he is, like, you can see it fill him with glee while it's happening.
Aww.
Like, if an audience member makes a surprising offer that he finds charming, you can just see him light up with joy at the fact that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just, like, a beautiful thing to see in an artist. To see someone who's, I don't know, working in a field that continues to surprise them and, you know, has, like, the heart that is of a shape that can appreciate and enjoy audience stuff in real time is really lovely.
Oh, that's so nice. And also, got to feel better for the audience member being involved in the audience interaction.
Sure, sure. Speaking as someone who's been recently traumatized by audience engagement. Yes!
Horrible story, really funny.
But yes, but I think the thing that I found with this show and, I suppose, looking back over his works as well, something about Con's shows feel like, and this is just like an image that came to me when reflecting upon Con 2077, he feels like, while he's on stage, that he is this, like, crazy inventor. And it's like, it's 1925. The Burton brothers are over there.
They're on one side of the stage.
Yes. And we're here with Concudus. And he's pulled his, so it's imagine Con in the street with a little top hat on. And he's standing in front of this, like, monolithic thing covered in a big dusty sheet. And then he pulls the sheet off.
So he's Nikola Tesla in The Prestige.
Yes.
He's David Bowie in The Prestige.
I only saw The Prestige once and it frustrated me the entire time.
Oh.
Concudus is standing with a top hat on and he's in front of this big moundy thing hidden underneath a sheet.
To clarify for our dear listener, this is not what's actually happening in the show. This is an elaborate Jake's, like...
This is an analogy that came to me and it's helped to elucidate and, like, illustrate my feelings about Con and the way that he presents his work.
Okay, so he's in a top hat. He's got a big sheet.
It's to do with the way that he presents his shows, engages with them, and what the shows are and how they function. It's 1925.
His stepdad is there.
Con Kudas is standing in the street, top hat on, in front of this big vibrating mass with a big sheet covering what it is. And so, and I don't know, he's an inventor. And he pulls this sheet off this big machine and reveals it to us. And we're all like, what the fuck is that thing? And then he's like, no, look at what it can do. And then he runs around it and shows you like what all the buttons are for. He squeaks these little horn mechanisms. It makes different noises. It can carry you around. It can fly sometimes. It's like him doing these shows is like him showing to you this weird mechanical beast that he made and why he finds it so fun. And then you, if you choose to engage with it in this way, can also see and experience how fun this thing can be too.
You know what? I doubted you. I doubted you, but you've come out the other side, and that's a really good analogy.
I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
He's an excited inventor. He's that's like, really look lovely. At this. Look, it makes this noise. Look, it does this now. And that's you can so be like, nice. Ooh! And then you just sit there and clap for this zany inventor man.
That's so lovely. Did he pull you into some crowd work?
Oh, shit, no. No.
Proudly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so lovely. I love that idea as a concept. I love, like, I assume what was mostly like a sort of a sketch show?
No, it was a story.
Oh, the whole thing was a story.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say I enjoy like...
There were like little like stand-up-y moments, but for the most part, it was about Con Kudas as this reanimated, defrosted man attempting a comedy set while also engaging with like potential subterfuge and also like engaging with the intentions of the people that have defrosted him in the first place.
Oh my God, Con.
I told you, high concept.
High concept. Yes. You can't have that. I came up with that.
Yeah, that you're right. Yeah, that's a James original.
Thanks so much.
Mm. And yeah, I'll just say one more thing. I thought it was wild the way that he managed to, especially during like an extended kind of like sci-fi chase sequence, especially. But throughout, it's like, but especially highlighted in that moment that was like a, I'd say like a 5-minute chase thing that happened.
Wow.
Through the like the sci-fi universe that we were in. Because it was 2077.
Yeah,
so
I get it. Yep.
Everything hovers and is like neon lit at this point.
Blade Runner.
How the future looks to me.
I hope so.
Yeah. But it was like, it was done with such precision and devotion and with such capable mime work that it truly like, it, at least for me, it like forced you to, or encouraged you to, and allowed you to kind of like soften your perspective on things, and really like I found myself like really lost in this like imaginary future world, which is a lame sentence to say.
Oh well, it's especially from you that's a surprise.
Yes,
because you hate sci-fi.
Yeah, but the sound design and the physical work that he was doing, that he's just like mastering more and more every time that I experience it, I really was like soaring with him through the confusing neon lit skies of this future.
Lame.
And it was, but I was lost in it, like to the point where it's like it would sort of end and I'd be like, oh God, that's right. Where am I? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Which is not a way that I often get to feel.
Yeah, that's so lovely.
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah.
A Con Kudas special.
What?
I don't know. It felt like the right thing to say.
A Con Kudas special.
Yeah.
Does he run a burger shop in this world?
He could do.
He could do.
Yeah, you're picking apart something that I said as a throwaway line, so don't expect anything good from me.
Always a thrill to talk to a competent improviser.
Oh, Jake!
Yes, James.
Hi, Jake.
Hello, James.
I went to see a show literally the other night. Don't know why I included that fact, but I did.
Okay, I believe you.
Thank you. I went with my dear friend Amanda, who's not a dear,
and
we went to see Breaking Bread with Bambi, which is hard to say a few times fast.
Yes, that's why you said it slowly.
Yes, it is. So we went to Ballers Clubhouse.
Ballers, what? Ballers Clubhouse?
Yes, that's what it's called. It's right behind Billboards in the city.
Okay.
When I tell you this venue was one of the most baffling venues I've ever gone to for a...
Ballers Clubhouse behind Billboards is baffling.
Yeah.
And you were there to break bread with Bambi.
Oh my God, I was breaking bread with Bambi at Ballers Clubhouse behind Billboards.
Yes.
Bambi, well done. We went along... Amanda and I approached the clubhouse.
Yes.
And, okay, so I'm going to spend, like, an annoying amount of time speaking about the venue because I need you to understand. I need you to know that this show that we went to see, Bambi is the drag persona of Jackson Garney, who is a comedian that I saw earlier in the comedy festival for our Chuckle Fest.
Yes.
At Storyville to do their show Saturn Return Policy.
Yes.
Yes. So, this is the other side of them doing... It's a drag...
Jackson has two sides.
Jackson has more than one. More than two sides. Multifaceted.
Ooh.
Contain multitudes. They. So this is... It was a very queer show, is what I need to get out there.
In a strange way?
Well, yeah, kind of.
Oh, okay.
Why do you say that?
I was just checking in. You know, yeah. Queer has many meanings.
No.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I didn't know that. I've never known anything in my life, and that's the character I've chosen today.
Oh, good. Good. It's a fun person to play opposite.
Anywho, so we go to Baller's Clubhouse. The entrance is a small atrium with fake grass and a huge flower arch over the elevator, and no one around. It's empty. Hmm. There's like a reception desk, and there's no one there. So we go, okay, and there's a sign that says, Come and join the journey on level 3. So we press level 3 in the elevator,
uh-huh.
Get in the elevator. The elevator has carpet, which is scary to me. The doors open, we get out. And this venue is, as Amanda pointed out, and I think this will paint what's happening. Amanda pointed out that two of her family members have had separate stag nights there.
Oh.
Okay. So we go in and the first thing we notice is the bar has like 5 teenage-looking people just standing there doing nothing.
Oh, like The Shining?
Like bored teenagers.
Oh, okay.
I assume they're 18 because they're working in a bar.
Uh-huh.
But like, it was just sort of like, hello, are we allowed to be in here? And then we look around, and at the end of this large warehousey sort of space are all these, I don't know what they're called. They're like air hockey tables, but they're really long. Like waffle board or something.
What's
or,
waffle board?
It's not the name of what they are, but they're something like that. It's like wiffle board or like shuffle board.
Snufflebutt.
It could be snufflebutt. The goal is, and Amanda and I, of course, we arrived a bit early, so we said, we'll play. So
I love snufflebutt.
I love snufflebutt for me, please. So we play snufflebutt. And what the goal is, it's you take a little metal puck and you slide it down to the other end of the table without trying to fall off there's like a moat around the side, and you try and get it as far down towards the end without falling off.
Uh-huh.
So that's the game that we play. It's that or darts. Like, this was a man's place.
Okay.
And it was really interesting as we got closer to the showtime, because it was populated by a few, like, macho men and some, like, you know, 18-year-olds out for their first night out. Mm. It was a very, like, heteronormative sort of vibe,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. Like, that's fine for them. And then as the show got closer, more and more dyed hair appeared.
Oh, God.
More and more piercings appeared.
Okay.
More and more well-manicured nails appeared. Mm-hmm. You know, really, like,
how did the teens cope?
They left.
Oh, God.
Which I think they were just going to leave anyway.
Oh, okay.
But I felt better and better as more queer people arrived,
uh-huh.
which was a fun little shift to notice.
Mm-hmm.
Bambi arrives.
Uh-huh.
And Bambi is wearing this beautiful white suit with like a black turtleneck and this orange wig that's so beautiful. It's like a Statue of Liberty-esque spikes on the top,
mm-hmm.
and then like gorgeous flowing curly hair. They arrive and start getting ready for the show. I always think it's nice to see the performer just hanging around before their show in like the crowd area. I think is quite nice.
Uh-huh.
Sets an informal tone, which is lovely.
Sure.
The show begins. We're ushered into the little show space. It's this weird, cluttered room, which is clearly and there's a karaoke stage, which is where Bambi is standing and sort of welcoming us in. There's a bathtub full of like little balls. There's like a picture of Tiffany from Breakfast at Tiffany's on the wall. There's like all these weird.
Who do you think plays Tiffany in Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Oh, I've never seen the movie. Is the main character named Tiffany? Oh, Tiffany! Revoke my gay card. Take it away. You know I've never seen anything. You know I've never seen anything. Tiffany's is where they go for breakfast.
There we go.
I knew that, but I also believe that the main character was named Tiffany.
You thought Audrey Hepburn was named Tiffany. And she's like, come over for breakfast.
Yes, I did. I did think that.
Okay.
I'm stupid.
No.
Okay. So there's a picture of Audrey Hepburn.
Uh-huh.
Is it just a very
eating breakfast?
Eating breakfast at Tiffany's. It's gauche. The whole room is an overwhelming mishmash of patterns, textures. There's like a big golden ball that's been turned into the bar. There's like this weird, it's weird, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
But it's wonderful in this weird sort of kitsch eclectic way.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was worried because it's such a heteronormative vibe, but to have this weird, like, queer crowd come into this space felt like really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to get that out of the way and say, weird venue, good choice. So We're ushered in. Straight away, it's very, like, casual. Bambi sort of welcoming us in and telling us all to sit down and immediately instructs us to pick up the pen and paper on the chairs and write down a question on one side that you would ask a drag queen and advice that you would want from a drag queen on the other side. Immediately, all of the audience is confused. None of us know the difference between a question and advice. We spend the next sort of 5 to 10 minutes sort of questioning Bambi on what that means. She spends the next 5 to 10 minutes sort of being angry at us for not knowing the difference between questions and advice.
Good, you deserve it.
Yeah. Frankly, she's not wrong. In like a really fun back and forth. We write them down, and that's so that we have some questions for if there's crowd work, so that we have something to fall back on, because crowd work can be stressful, which I thought was quite nice.
Mm.
Yeah. So the way the show works, it's breaking bread with Bambi. So there's a little table with two chairs on the karaoke stage. Bambi's there, and she welcomes on a guest, and it's different every night. And the guest comes on, and they basically just talk and sort of catch up and discuss their lives and what they've been doing in terms of, like, drag, in terms of performing, where they are in their careers, and just end up having, like, a shooting the shit with each other, which is really, like, I'm always down for that if they're interesting people to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So the guest is Lazy Susan. Do you know about Lazy Susan?
I know about the, like, the table version. Well, you know?
Yeah. I know you would. Because you're lazy.
I just enjoy, you know, sharing dumplings with people.
You want these dumplings, baby? Oh!
Thank you, Cher.
Fernando.
So, Lazy... Oh, Cher, like, Cher sharing Nando's with Fernando on a Lazy Susan.
Nando's Fernando.
Oh! Is this the dumbest thing ever said?
You know what? Shockingly, probably not. So, the guest is Lazy Susan. I love Lazy Susan. Lazy Susan is a drag queen who has been around for if you're listening, Lazy, not for ages, quite young and beautiful, but has been around for a while. And so I was really excited when Lazy was announced as the guest, because I, on a personal level, used to be quite, not involved in the world of drag, but I was very much aware of the world of drag, in that I wanted to be a drag queen. I knew all about the Beastie Girls, which was the group that Lazy Susan used to be a part of.
Mm.
Like, I used to see Bambi perform when they were... Because Bambi used to do drag, then quit drag, then got back into drag, which was something they discussed in the show.
Mm.
So I used to be, like, hyper aware of this world. And then I sort of got dropped out of it and recently have sort of been wanting to re-engage with it a little bit more. So this felt like a really natural sort of way to dip my toes into the water. So these two end up just having like a really lovely conversation about, yeah, all things drag in Melbourne, which is quite specific. And I don't know if there's any sort of shows like this out there at the moment, which is quite exciting. But mostly they just end up having jokes with each other. Because it's a comedy festival, Jack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. One thing that Lazy did during the show straight away that reminded me a lot of... What was that show that you saw where it was at... It was upstairs at Motley Bow House recently. Guy, crazy, scary energy.
Jet Bond. He loves money.
That's the show. Thank you. Lazy... So I sat down in the second row with Amanda, and there was no one in the first row. So one of the things Lazy did pretty much straight away was swipe all the chairs from the front row, knock them down, and make us the new front row.
She jet-bonded it.
She jet-bonded it. And then asked me to knock down the chairs next to me, because they were empty, and then other people to knock down the chairs next to them, because they were bothering her.
Ah.
Power move. Fantastic. So it was the first night of this show, opening cool. night, and I had spoken to Bambi beforehand, and, you know... It's the sort of show where, by the nature of what it is, because it is essentially like a talk show, you don't really know what's going to happen or how it's going to go. So everyone, like, it's sort of like this apprehension of what's this going to be? And it ended up being so lovely.
Hmm.
Like, Lazy Susan is a very, I think, sensible first guest. She's very funny. She's very talented. She's got, like, some really good stories. And she and Bambi have really good banter. So... If this is the format that they're going to continue on with getting the guest on and continuing to sort of like explore different levels of like quite niche queer Melbourne stories and history, I think it's onto a really exciting time and I'm really excited to see more. Lazy told a really fantastic story about a hookup that she had in drag, which I will not spoil, but it made my sides hurt from laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a lot of the audience were also sort of obviously... in the same world as Bambi and Lazy, because there was a lot of like back and forth with the audience, so much so that Lazy quite often told people it's not your show, which just which was how much people were sort of so keen to sort of offer up their experiences when they were asked.
That's lovely. Do you think is the show kind of like catering to that community? Is that the sort
seems
of audience?
Seems to be, so much so that at a certain point Bambi was sort of asking, Is anyone here just a member of the general public? And like one person put their hand up. Amanda next to me was going to, but is also, like us, terrified of audience interaction, mm-hmm. so didn't.
Yeah.
But one person put her hand up and was then riddled for being like, why are you here?
Oh.
What do you know? In like a very fun drag queen way.
Sure.
Which can come across as quite mean.
It's why I'm scared a little bit of some drag things that happen.
Yeah, you should be. They would destroy you.
Yeah.
It was also quite interesting in terms of every now and again, from that point onwards, when they said something that they realised was quite niche, they would turn to this girl in the audience, Hannah, and they would say, so Hannah, blah blah is a drag queen in the Melbourne scene, and then sort of give us a bit of backstory, which was really nice.
Yeah.
But no, it does seem like it's specific. Well, it seems like it's specifically catering to at least the queer part of Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
but it depends on the guest that comes in.
Mm.
I know, for example, they've got Anna Piper Scott?
Yeah.
Coming in as one of the guests. Sam and Mel. Mel and Sam are coming in as guests. But they've got a bunch of really exciting guests lined up, as well as a bunch of other drag queens.
Sure.
So I guess it depends on the guests that are on that night.
Well, that's great if it can cater to Hannah's as well as...
Totally.
Yeah.
And Hannah didn't... Like, it was obviously like a bit of fun ribbing, and Hannah was obviously a little bit... But it was all done in fun. And I think if... Yeah, if this is the first time they've done that, which it seems like they have, this is the first time they've done this format... I think it's onto something.
Cool.
And I really hope they keep it at Ballers Clubhouse. Because it is such a weird venue for this show. So strange. Just the inherent queering that comes with a group of people like this, coming into a space designed to be doing shots of tequila with your straight buddies before he ties the knot. It felt somehow sort of like freeing and wonderful.
Hmm.
Mm. Have you... I was speaking to Ben afterwards, who is the producer for the Maybe Pile, and he mentioned and he asked me not to quote him specifically on this, but I'm going to.
What?
No. He just said no. He said the building that this clubhouse is in used to be like another bar or venue of some sort that was so dirty and gross that eventually it just got condemned and shut down.
Yeah.
And then it got turned into this building and rebuilt as to something quite. It's something that you take Instagram photos of when you're getting married. And for us to come and see this show that sort of comes by its definition from the grungy roots of, like, you know, dingy drag bars and shitty, like, RSLs out in Bendigo that Lazy Susan had just done a drag gig at, to come and do a show like this in a place like that felt quite poetic and nice.
Right.
Yeah, it was just something that I got thinking about. Yeah, I think... Bambi also strikes me as someone who is really a wonderful host. And I can see them really being able to sort of be a great foil to whoever they get on as a guest. And seeing Bambi versus Jackson Garney perform was also quite unique and quite a fun chance to get to see the two sides of someone. Because they both have a different sort of confidence. Like Jackson Garney, when he's on stage doing his performance, has confidence. But it's more of like a, you know, stand-up comedian confidence, which is different to a drag queen confidence, because a drag queen confidence you could slap a bitch and it will be fine, and to see that he does have both of those sides of the coin is really quite satisfying. I think Bambi's a really it's exciting to see Bambi coming back to the world of drag. I was speaking to Amanda after the show because she obviously has not seen a whole bunch of drag. And for her to come out of the show saying, I didn't realize there was drag like this. Like, this is really wonderful to see. Because at certain points, Bambi was just sort of sitting legs spread with a microphone going, yeah, and what did you think about this? It just felt really nice to know that there are drag queens out there that aren't all ka-ka-da-ka-ka-da-boom and, like, serving cunt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you weren't, Bambi. You looked gorgeous. But, you know, you're a lot more approachable when you're sitting down with a microphone.
Hello, James.
Hello, Jay.
Hi. How are you going?
I'm good. How are you?
Shut up.
Oh,
I went to
like
the... I went to the Greek Centre.
Oh.
Yes.
Centre of all Greek.
But not the centre of Greece.
No, that's...
That's the role of
Sparta?
Rizzo.
Sparta?
Oh.
This is Sparta?
You went geography. I went musical theatre.
I went 300.
Oh, as we all should. As often as we can.
God, yes.
Anyway, I went to the Greek Centre.
Okay.
To see NTNNNNN.
Yes.
It's hard to count and say letters at the same time.
No, it's 3 and 5, so it's NTNNNNN.
How is it 3 and 5?
That's how I said it in the intro, that's how I remember it.
3 and 5?
Yeah. It's NTNNN, 3 and 2.
Now that is some good counting. So, NTNNNNN is a show. And in the show, it's like a news broadcasting show, I guess?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, because it... Yeah. And what it is it's Osher Ginsberg hosting...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I paused there for gasps.
Yeah, you did. You got one.
Yeah, right.
Right, Osher.
Yeah, so Osher Ginsberg is hosting NTNNNN.
That is hard.
Which is a pretend news show where he plays the news anchor and he reports on the real news of the day. So he wakes up, as he explains to us in the show, he wakes up in the morning, reads the newspaper, and then writes out things that are happening in the news and then presents it to us as this news reporter. And then he has a collection of improv people with him who then do improv based on the story that's just been told.
Oh, what a fun concept. Okay, no need to mock me immediately. What a fun concept.
Yeah. It is improv, so, you know, bring to that whatever you want in terms of bias or prejudice against the
Which
concept.
Which it seems like you have.
True. I am not the sort of man to seek out an improv show.
No.
I don't think I really want to have a fun night out, so I'm going to find some improv tickets. But I understand that it's difficult to do, and it's, of course, impressive mechanically.
Improvsive.
You see, moments and choices like that one, my improvsive chum. Oh, I am a bit dubious.
Look, if I'm your barometer for improv, then yeah, you're going to be disappointed.
But I'll say, no, but this group was really lovely. Mm. Claire Kavanagh and Alex Reynolds were like standout wonderfulness in this troupe of improv skateers that were with Osher for this thing.
Aww.
But also John Glover was also there.
Oh!
You know, from Orifice fame.
Guzzling Glover. You love to guzzle Glover.
I love to guzzle Glover. He did Microsoft Orifice, for those of you who want to be more vividly reminded of what he was doing.
You right, buddy?
I don't know. I think I was just like possessed by the guide. Like, go on, Jake, get the facts out.
Right, so...
So, anyway, so these...
John Glover is in it.
John Glover is in it and continues to be really impressive and delightful. But yes, really solid group of improvisers.
You're falling apart.
I can't even... Oh my God, talking about improv is hard for me.
That's okay. Just work through it.
Yeah, but one of the stories... And don't scream at me about this.
Okay.
But one of the stories was about how Taylor Swift is a billionaire now.
I knew it.
Yes.
Great.
Any thoughts on that? Or we can move on.
Okay, my thoughts are, what was she painted as a villain?
No, it was just facts. It wasn't super editorialized.
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah. She should have been painted as a villain, is what I have to say.
But anyway, so the way that the show functions, and they also talked about mining on the moon is also a thing apparently we're doing
now. Oh, yeah. That's terrifying.
But yeah, it was a fun way to learn these facts, you know? Some of this news was breaking to me.
I guess it's like the 7:30 Project? Is that the show? 7 p.m.?
It's just
PM?
The project. It hasn't been called 7 p.m. Project in years. Like almost a decade.
I haven't watched it since then. it's sort of almost like a more fun version of that, which was initially a more fun version of the news.
Sure, yes.
There you go.
Yeah. And even like the way that this show works, like there's a teleprompter at the back that Osher Ginsberg is reading from.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
It's super
fun. Did you get to turn around and look at it?
I was allowed to.
I love a teleprompter.
Yeah, why do you love a teleprompter?
I just think there's something very like, I don't know, like cutting edge, just like... Every word is fresh and new from the teleprompter. They never know what it's going to be. It's exciting.
Wouldn't it be fresher and newer without a teleprompter?
No, it's just... It's how I feel, Jake. You can't question how I feel.
Oh, that's the rule?
Yes.
My feelings are facts, and facts are concrete and unquestionable.
Yeah. I think the chicest form of teleprompter is those ones where, like, they'll be, like, at the podium, and there's, like, a...
The glass one.
The pane of glass. And it's projected onto the pane of glass. That's what I mean by cutting edge, and it's like, ooh, it feels like you're about to read like a declaration of war or something off that teleprompter.
Oh, well, yeah, no, Osher didn't pitch war.
Was that the sort of teleprompter, though, or was it like just like an
old
school
one? No, it was
behind us. Okay, right.
Yeah. No, and he's such a professional, you could barely tell that he was reading anything. I want to say, too, not only was it like thrilling to be in the same room as Osher Ginsberg.
Mm-hmm. Which it was,
because he's been like a part of my life since Australian Idol, and I feel like a lot of people feel the same way.
Oh, God, yeah.
I've never watched a
National Treasure.
Yes, I've never watched a moment of The Bachelor, but I understand that that's where his talents are currently being smooshed, like, into that mechanism. Yes. But it was nice to even just sort of get a glimpse of what his actual sense of humor is like, and to see him kind of be a person, and be that close to his beautiful, like, television teeth.
Yeah.
It was,
I guess for him to be separate to, like, a corporation controlling the image that they want to project.
Completely. And it was fun to watch him, like, enjoy telling these, like, quite crass, crude, like, rude jokes and stuff.
Osher!
It was nice to see this, like, you know, this
other... Bad boy side.
Yeah, this bad boy tired of Osher.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I came out of this thing a bigger fan than I was going in, and I went in as a pretty big fan.
Wow, cool thing to say, Jake.
No, super duper lame. When we were leaving and I had to walk past him because he was handing out promotional pens, I was legitimately nervous. Thankfully, did not get embroiled in the conversation accidentally.
Oh, I was going to ask if you said anything.
Of course not. No.
Jake.
No, he handed me a pen. He was like, here's a pen for you. And I was like, really? And he was like, of course.
That's pretty good.
That's, look, I didn't fuck it up.
For you.
For
that's
me.
Pretty good.
Oh, I'm being sincere.
Yeah. Yes,
given my track record, I should have like dropped a pie or something.
Slipped over and, you know, your pants fall down or something.
Absolutely. Yes. And then tumble down a staircase and crush a puppy. Yes. That's how it should have gone. There was a woman sitting next to me the entire show.
Ew.
She was, oh my God. And she was eating pretzels the whole time and crunching. And then between crunches, she was sucking pretzel out of her own teeth.
Ew.
It was really...
Ew.
A lot.
I really don't deal well with eating noises. Eating noises are the one thing that I hear and I shut down. Yeah. I can't do them.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I feel you with that.
Thank you.
Stand in solidarity.
I'm very brave. But yeah, that's my report. Hello, James.
Bonjour.
Hello. I went to the Butterfly Club.
Oh, hello, the Butterfly Club.
Yes.
Oh.
There's nothing French about what's about to happen. So
just had a hankering for an accent.
Yes. Yeah, I was there to see Mina versus the Martians.
Oh, does she win?
I don't want to spoil it. Like a toilet.
I hate it when you say that.
Full disclosure. Jackson Aether is in the show.
Oh, yeah.
He's a man that I think is fantastic. He's a pal of mine.
He's a puppeteer.
He is a puppet maker and puppeteer, etc.
Okay.
Yeah. And also Jen Spears, someone with whom I was embroiled during my time at Monash University Student Theatre. We played opposite each other in the Doll's House half of an Ibsen mashup of a Doll's House and Hedda Gabler.
And now that course doesn't exist.
No, the student theatre exists. The course that I did does not. Does it invalidate my undergraduate degree?
Perhaps. Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, yeah, a little.
Trust me.
Yes, I got this qualification. Don't Google it. Yes. And also featuring in this show is Liam O'Kane, who I think you'll remember as being in that Stephen Dawson play called Rough Trade. And he was like... thrusting butt sex for like 20 minutes at the start of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And was, oh God.
Sorry, yes.
Continue moaning softly to
yourself. I remember.
Yeah, but he was remarkable in that. And was wonderful to see him again. Hmm. So the show itself, it's the third in a trilogy.
Oh, have you seen the first two?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it itself is kind of a spin-off / sequel to Dracula.
Oh, yes.
Because she's Mina Harker from Dracula.
Mina from Dracula.
Which, fortunately, I just finished reading Dracula. So
you're
it's
lucky ducky.
In a world I was perfectly set up to see the third part of this trilogy about a character from Dracula.
Yeah, if ever there was a way to watch the show, this sounds like it.
It's one of the ways. So Jen Spears plays Mina and everyone else is around her. It's by Inez Lloyd, which is the surnames of the two people that are sort of like running this whole situation.
Oh, yes.
And on top of that as well, the music in the show, like the original music is by Matthew Hadgraft and Christian Bazzari. And Matthew Hadgraft, if I'm sure you will not remember, was the really competent and fantastic and very good at performing pianist that was on the left of Frankie G's cabaret called Well Shit.
You're right, I don't remember that at all. But I trust you, I trust you.
But he was wonderful in that, and yeah, I don't know, it continues to be very impressive, seemingly, because the music in this was great. This show, I thought it was an original song, but it turns out it's just a song from Sesame Street that was really good.
Oh God, what's the song?
I Don't Want to Live on the Moon. Ernie sings it about the moon and how he doesn't want to live there because he'd miss everyone that he loves if he lived on the moon.
Ernie, he'd miss Bert too much.
He would miss Bert, yeah.
He'd miss that sweet ass. Sorry.
No, Bert famously has a real juicy...
Sweet ass! So Mina's versing some Martians.
Mina's versing some Martians.
Martians.
Martians. Yeah. So she has a son, and his name is Quincy, and he is played by Jackson. And the show itself, functionally, the way the story is largely told is via kind of like journal entries. So it's like, Jackson's character of Quincy is much more distinctly reading from his journal, whereas Mina is also reading from her journal, but somehow it feels less stapled to that conceptually. But that's how the story kind of happens. They narrate and things happen, and there's also action occurring in front of us too.
Because that's similar to how the original Dracula story is told, isn't it?
It's
a bunch
of like
letters.
Letters and journals and stuff. Yes, okay. Yes. I wouldn't say it's one of the strengths of Bram Stoker's text.
You mean
text.
That really old book, the first ever horror book, was like not super good by today's modern standards.
I'm just saying that by my standards, that's not how I would... If I was talking to Bram, and Bram was like, this is what I want to do...
Imagine naming your son Bram.
It's a pretty cool name.
Bram.
I love those, like, brutal, masculine, simple names.
Like what, like Cain?
Bram, Cain, kind of. Yeah.
I like the name Cain. Cain's a really hot
Cain's
name.
Good. Heath. Honestly, Rod.
Heath.
Heath. Yeah. All these ones that are just kind of like noises that a stick makes when it hits against wood.
Thwack.
Thwack. That's a cool name. I wouldn't like laugh at a thunder.
I'm Thwack Hardy.
Can you imagine? You're what?
Thwack Hardy.
See, that's a bit stupid, but that's your surname's fault.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
So Jackson's a baby.
Jackson's not a baby. He's an adult, like, very, like, fancy, handsome man.
I mean, his name's Quincy.
His name is Quincy. But he's, like, oh, kind of like, he's this, he's, the idea of him is, like, he's this, like, young, handsome, gay guy.
Okay.
And he's very much like this.
Oh, yeah.
This is how he talks, and he's working, like, there's World War I is happening. And instead of being on the front line where he wants to be, Quincy is working in, like, the inventory department, I guess. Like, it felt kind of like a general store for missiles.
Yep.
And he works there with Liam O'Kane's character, who is like a dreamy soldier. And they both work there. And there's this unexpected, very welcome, and of course Jake is very into this like gay subplot that's happening.
Ooh, yeah.
Like a lot of what Quincy goes through is being really in love with Liam's character. And it's just these two men like almost kissing for half of the show.
Oh, that's one of your favourite things.
Yearning. Oh my God.
Pining.
Oh my God.
Give me a yearn.
That's just, oh my God. Yeah, and that's where the song happened. They're flying a plane together and Liam sings I Don't Want to Live on the Moon to Quincy while they're flying a plane. Aww. And both of their sets of hands are on the joystick of the plane.
Aww.
Oh my God.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, there's a lot of sweetness in this show. It would have two little tiny factoid intervals where Innes and Lloyd came out and told us things that they talked about the inspiration for the show and the different like pop cultural references and things that informed the way that the show takes shape.
Okay.
Because seemingly based on conversation, the three shows of the trilogy draw upon different elements from different genres.
Okay.
So this is just the sci-fi third of the journey that we've gone on with the trilogy.
Sure, that's what fun. It is.
Yeah, and yeah, I learned a bunch of stuff about sci-fi.
Did you learn something that stood out to you?
A lot of it fell out of my head pretty quickly.
Yeah, that happened.
Again, I don't have a cupboard for those sorts of facts.
Where did the Martians come into it all?
Went into the plot itself.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the show, like what the story largely is. Outside of like the, to me, very central, very integral gay subplot.
Yes.
There's also a collection of aliens from Mars who are attacking the world during World War I.
Oh.
And they come down in these like tripod shaped spaceships. So it's like I guess that's what they are. They're like just very like tall, terrifying tripod-shaped things that kind of have, like, a hub at the top.
Oh, so War of the Worlds.
I suppose so. Yeah, they're kind of like, yeah, like, long, rigid tentacles.
Yeah.
And then, like, the spaceship is at the top of them.
Yeah, that's War of the Worlds.
Yeah, so, great. So, yeah, so we kind of, yeah, we meet the Martians. We have Mina, who at the very start overcomes almost being drowned. And then, yeah, has to, like, you know, go on this adventure with the people that she encounters and befriends and such. And she and her son sort of also have to find each other while trying to conquer these World War I embroiled Martians.
Oh, okay. That's a fun setup.
There's a bunch of stuff going on. Yes. And that, like, that story on top of these, like, fun genre-related factoids, they packed a lot in. Like, I felt like a lot of things were coming at my brain all at once, which is always fun. I think, too, like, a real, like, standout element of this show was the amount of, like, tight ensemble work that was happening.
Mm.
Like, the way that they were all so just, like, intermingled, especially in moments when they were, like, embodying aliens. Or
yeah.
They were even just, like, coming together to embody different parts of, like, different fights that happened.
Mm.
Or constructing parts of the world that existed. It was, like, it seemed, like, I don't know the truth, of course, but it seemed as if it was a bunch of people that really, like, really care about each other. Mm. And really love this story. And were having just a lot of fun getting to share it and tell it to people. Yeah. And it was beautiful. In that way, it almost felt like community theatre in the way of it just having that level of, like, charm that seemed to be, like, the layer of, like, wonderful polish across everything that happened.
It's just a bunch of good people throwing themselves into it.
Yeah, very much so.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Super duper nice. Yes. And it opened with a version of 9 to 5.
Oh,
which was
yes.
Great, which wasn't just a perfect musical choice, but also had emotional payoff later.
Did it?
There's some real craftsmanship at play with this show.
What was the emotional payoff?
I'm not going to spoil it like a toilet. Don't.
Shut the fuck up.
Ah!
I never want to hear that again.
Hear what?
Spoil it. Like a toilet. fun to say.
See?
It's fun to say. It's fun to say. I take it back. I take back my aggression.
Yeah, and with their ensemble work, just to go back to it, like, it was to the extent that, it would have impressed Concutus, I think. It was that level of, like, immersed, soundscapey, action-packed, like, car chases and that type of thing. Like, that's the sort of stuff they were accomplishing.
With slick and rehearsed.
Slick and rehearsed.
I'm trying to dumb it down.
What a lukewarm quote to whack on a poster.
Yeah. Slick and rehearsed.
Yeah. I want to say, too, that and this is a compliment that I don't think I've ever given something before, and it's one that I think is quite substantial in my book. Oh. I thought a lot of the comedy was quite Austin Powersian.
Oh! That is, coming from Jake Stewart, that is a high praise.
Oh my god.
That's very high praise.
I love this movie.
What makes you say that?
Just the style of some of the comedy. I thought, like, the style of absurdity that happened, the way that particular, like, comedic beats played out, like, yeah, it felt very Spy Who Shagged Me. there was a joke that I feel like falls into this family of joke, I think, that I really, really loved. There was, like, one of the characters was named Campbell, and he was like, oh, I got my nickname because when I was sleeping once, my friends put my hand in a bowl of hot soup, and they were like, oh, and that's why they call you Campbell, like Campbell's soup. And it's like, no, that's why they call me Shits Himself Jenkins.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that's funny.
Me and two women in the audience took a while to come back from that.
That's funny. Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. And just in the spirit of just offering forth funky little factoids, they had custom-made waistcoats on.
Oh!
They were great, which had, like, little purple, like, lapel thingies. I don't know if that's what it's called when it's a waistcoat.
Yeah, I wonder.
But, like, yeah. But, you know, there's, like, tongues that go alongside
the ribs.
I think
it's still lapels, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's wonderful.
Yeah, made by Tom Sawyer waistcoats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Proper waistcoats.
Proper waistcoats made for the cast. And yeah, just finally, I think I just want to point out how thrilling it is anytime people, especially in shows like this that are very like ensemble-y and character filled, it's fun to spot the tiny funny things that are chunked in just because they're funny. Like there were characters that would have like two or three sentences, but they just have a really funny walk.
Yeah, they find the humor wherever they can.
Yeah, it was like a story very enthusiastically and excitedly told by an ensemble of people that seemed to really like adore and trust each other.
Oh.
And that outside of everything else is just an impressive and lovely thing to behold. But yeah, they achieved something really impressive and strange. And yeah, it was a fun thing to experience, I think.
Looking forward to Mina Part 4.
Yeah, and I can see why they would want to keep following this woman around. Yeah, Jen's version of Mina is so, like, intense and graceful and has a beautiful singing voice, which really comes in handy with the musical numbers.
Oh, sure,
and yeah, but everyone in the show is so capable of, like, just, like, owning the stage and being at the center of things. Hmm. And it was just, like, yeah, a handful of really, really competent, impressive, talented people.
Oh, bah. Gorgeous.
Bah. Alrighty, righty, right. We have to get vermoosin' because we've got
shows to see.
Shows to see, places to do,
chuckles
people to eat. Chuckles to fest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you want to get in the last minute, Jamesy, before we finish up for this episode?
No, I feel like we touched on everything that I really wanted to touch on today.
Oh, that must feel good. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, how about you, Jake? Do you have any last points?
I was less rigorously touched, I suppose. But no, I think I've spent enough of myself. And now it's time to replenish. Much like a vampire.
From the icy cold waters of theatre.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, replenish yourself from the fountain of theatre.
Sure, yes. Yeah. I don't know why it's ice cold.
Well, you said Dracula, you said vampires, and it made me think of cold.
Didn't say Dracula.
You said vampires.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
You know what? We're going to kill you.
So, yeah. Oh, God. A vampire that's stopping being a vampire and now telling me jokes. It's a good premise.
Aiden Wilcox bit me, and that's what I do now.
Strikes again. I guess we will finish up by saying we may disagree with some of the things we've already said in this podcast. We're human beings, and our opinions shift like the ever-changing waters of theatre itself.
And friends, don't let friends become theatre critics.
Yeah, it is fun to do.
It's something. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, we'll see you in the next episode of the Chucklefest, dear listener.
Absolutely. Bat flapping sound.
Yeah, we'll put that in later.
Definitely.
Well, I'd like to visit the moon on a rocket ship high in the air. Yes, I'd like to visit the moon but I don't think I'd like to live there. Though I'd like to look down at the earth from above, I would miss all the places and people I love. So although I might like it for one afternoon, I don't want to live on the moon.